Good afternoon. My name is Nathan Ramsey. I'm with Lambda Sky Regional Council, and thank you for joining our weekly COVID call. I think others are going to be joining the call momentarily, but just want to address a few housekeeping matters before we start. Everyone on the call will be muted, so we have to unmute yourself from our end. So if you have any questions, please enter those in the chat box. And if you're unable to do that, you can also text me at 828-768-3216. That's 828-768-3216. This call is being recorded, so hopefully want everyone to know that, make you aware of it. Next week will be, I think is next Thursday, July the 2nd. Probably the July 4th weekend, some people are taking off. So I think what we'll do is we'll take a break next week, and then we'll crank up the following week to provide any updates and hopefully have some presentations that you may find helpful. Today we're going to have with us Drew Christie from the governor's office, and Drew's kind enough to share with us the news from the governor's announcement yesterday. So I know there's a lot packed into that, and we appreciate Drew for helping share with us on the details there. Chris Wall was scheduled to give us a legislative update at the federal and state level. Unfortunately, Chris got called into another meeting, and so he just notified me late this morning that he could not join us, but hopefully we'll get Chris on a future call. And I know there's a lot of things happening on a legislative standpoint that we want to try to keep our region informed of, and the efforts to try to support our state and local governments during this economic and health crisis. And then we're also blessed to have with us Dr. Jenny Harris. Dr. Harris is the Director of Business Services through the North Carolina Department of Commerce, Division of Workforce Solutions. And so she's going to give us an update of all the work that her and her team at Department of Commerce are doing to help businesses during this economically trying times with COVID-19. So I'll now turn it over to Drew Christie. So Drew, thank you for joining us. Drew is the Western representative for Governor Cooper, does an outstanding job keeping us informed and supporting our region. And we just really appreciate his gracious use of his time to share with us, because we know you got lots on your plate. So Drew, I'll turn it over to you. And again, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Nathan, and thank you for Lambda Sky for hosting this meeting, and thank everyone for attending and being attentive to all that's happening right now. So I'll go through some numbers to start out with before I get into the meat and potatoes of today. As of today, there have been 57,183 confirmed cases in North Carolina, and sadly, 1,290 deaths have occurred thus far. Of those cases, yesterday there were 1,009 new cases, and 5% of those new cases were in congregate living settings. There were 19 new deaths yesterday. And there are currently 891 people hospitalized due to COVID-19. There have been 85 new admissions in the last 24 hours. The next numbers I'll talk about are some unemployment numbers. Briefly, I'll cover that. There have been just over $4.5 billion paid out in unemployment benefits. And there have been a little over 1.6 million claims filed from March 15th through June 24th. So those numbers are reflective as of yesterday. And speaking of yesterday, there were 10,168 claims filed on June 18th. And then on June 24th, so yesterday, there were 12,501 new claims filed yesterday. So just trying to keep everything in perspective on all fronts there. And now I'll move into what the governor had started off or had announced yesterday. But before I do, it's imperative now more so than ever that we always remember the three W's: to wear a face covering, to wash your hands for at least 20 seconds frequently, and to wait 6 feet apart. So as of yesterday, I'm sure most of y'all heard the governor's announcement. He announced starting tomorrow at 5 o'clock that it will be mandatory to wear face coverings in public, both indoors and outdoors. So that will be mandatory. And we will also be remaining in phase two for an additional 3 weeks. So phase two will now run through 5 o'clock Friday, July 17th. So really the only thing that has changed in phase two is the addition of the mandatory face coverings. And a definition of a face covering, just so everyone has this knowledge, a face covering means a covering of the nose and mouth that is secured to the head with ties, straps, or loops over the ears, or is simply wrapped around the lower face. A face covering can be made of a variety of synthetic and natural fabrics, including cotton, silk, or linen. Ideally, a face covering has two or more layers. A face covering may be factory made, sewn by hand, or can be improvised from household items such as scarves, bandanas, t-shirts, sweatshirts, or towels. These face coverings are not meant or not intended for use by healthcare professionals in the care of patients. Those would be for surgical masks or your N95 masks. So, again, just a simple face covering, whether it be a bandana or a specifically made face covering or a scarf, is acceptable, but it will be mandatory after 5 o'clock tomorrow for face coverings to be worn out in public and in indoors and outdoors. Let's see. So going into Safer at Home phase two, covering again more about this, all of these things stay the same that were there currently. So certain businesses may be open with restrictions and following state health guidelines, including restaurants, childcare, businesses, overnight, and day camps, personal care, grooming, massage, tattoo parlors, and indoor and outdoor pools. Again, all of this is just a continuation of Executive Order 141. People may gather for social purposes as long as they do not exceed the mass gathering limit of 10 people indoors and 25 people outdoors. And moving on from that, going back into face coverings, and does this order require North Carolinians to wear face coverings? Of course, the answer is yes. So in retail businesses must have all workers wear face coverings. Retail businesses must also have customers wear face coverings when they are inside the establishment and may be within 6 feet of another person, unless the customer comes under an exemption identified by the order. If the customer states that an exemption applies, the retailer should try to make accommodations. The business may choose to provide curbside service, provide home delivery, allow the customer to enter without a face covering or use some other reasonable measure to deliver goods. Restaurants and personal care, grooming and tattoo businesses, all of these, the workers must wear face coverings. With restaurants, restaurants must also have customers wear face coverings when they are not at their table, unless the customer comes under an exemption identified by in the order. So here are some exemptions or exceptions for wearing a face mask. You should not wear a face covering due to any medical or behavioral condition or disability, including but not limited to any person who has trouble breathing or is unconscious or incapacitated or is otherwise unable to put on or remove the face covering without assistance, is under the age of 11 years, is actively eating or drinking, is strenuously exercising, and strenuously exercising also means walking and hiking when you're not around people within the 6 foot distance guidelines, is seeking to communicate with someone who is hearing impaired in a way that requires the mouth to be visible, is giving a speech for a broadcast or to an audience, is working at home or is in a personal vehicle, is temporarily removing his or her face covering to secure government or medical services for identification purposes, would be at risk from wearing face coverings at work as determined by local, state, or federal regulators or workplace safety guidelines, has found that their face coverings is impeding visibility to operate a vehicle or equipment, and the last one is a child whose parent, guardian, or responsible person has been unable to place the face covering safely on the child's face. And finally here, no proof or documentation is required if an individual falls into an exemption category. So that's kind of the brief highlight there. I will be around and available for questions, so feel free to put them in the chat box or let Nathan know, and I'd be happy to answer them for you.
Thank you so much, Drew. And again, my cell phone is 828-768-3216. That's 828-768-3216 if you want to text a question to me, or you can also enter that question in the chat box and we'll try to get a response for you. Drew, just a few questions. And again, thank you for sharing with us today. It was my understanding from reading the governor's executive order, in some cases, if you can maintain social distancing, maybe you wouldn't need to require a mask. So let's say in an office setting, if you can maintain 6 feet social distancing, or a manufacturing facility or a school or something like that, would you be required to wear a mask if you can remain 6 feet apart?
You would not be required to wear a mask, again, if and only if you can maintain that 6 feet. So I'm currently in my office, my door is shut, I am not wearing a face mask. But if I'm walking around the halls in my office, I will put one on because the halls are too narrow to abide by the 6 foot social distancing guidelines. And so that would apply to factories and other office buildings as well.
And also, so I understand a lot of folks, may be reluctant to wear a mask. And, we've tried, I think, to share that, whether you want to wear a mask or not, we hope it's helpful to help us reopen our economy and to stop the spread of this virus. We've talked on previous calls, and I think Secretary Cohen and Governor Cooper have, you know, given this as an explanation for this face mask requirement. The number of, certainly we're doing a lot more testing in our state, but the percent of positives are increasing, our hospitalizations are increasing. So a lot of those metrics are going the wrong way. Can you just sort of give us a little background to folks? Because, you know, I think, you know, on some level we think, well, you know, the worst of the virus is behind us, and so we can sort of go back to a semi-normal life.
Yes, Nathan. The governor and public health officials remain guided by science, data, and facts in making decisions regarding COVID-19. Since moving into phase two on May 22nd, several key metrics, which you had mentioned earlier, the percent positives, the number of hospitalizations, the number of deaths, and granted, deaths are the lagging factor. They show up they're the last metric to have significant movements. So several of these key metrics have been trending in concerning direction. Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, testified before Congress on June 23rd that the next couple of weeks are going to be critical. And he specifically mentioned North Carolina in his statements, that our trends are not moving in the right direction. So in order to address these troubling metrics and to slow the spread of COVID-19, North Carolina is continuing the measures of phase two or executive 141 for an additional 3 weeks, there have been numerous studies, and this is why we did not do this earlier, because the studies weren't there yet, because we didn't have any data on it. But face coverings have been shown to slow the spread of COVID-19. And so this is why we are instituting this now and not earlier, because we did not have the data to back up why we were doing this. And again, the governor and Secretary Cohen have stated that we are going to be using science, data, and facts to guide our decisions.
Thank you so much, Drew. And again, there, if you have any questions, enter those into the chat box. And I know Drew's real helpful in trying to respond to those, and or text my number as well. We currently have an MPO meeting going on right now in our region over our transportation planning. I know a bill has been sent to the governor to address some of the DOT challenges, and I hope in a future call we're going to try to give you an update on that, because with the reduction in travel resulting in coronavirus and other structural impacts at DOT, there's really a financial crisis there on our transportation side. So we hope to be able to provide you an update on that on a future call. But I'm glad to be able to introduce Dr. Jenny Harris with the North Carolina Department of Commerce. Dr. Harris oversees the business services from the Department of Commerce Division of Workforce Solutions. And, you know, everybody wants to reopen our economy and help people get back to work and help employers meet their workforce needs. So Dr. Harris is helping lead that on behalf of the state of North Carolina. And we appreciate her leadership, and she's joining us by phone today. So Dr. Harris, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me. I hope I'm going to give you information that can be useful. One of the things that in response to COVID that we quickly saw, obviously, was the WARN notices that were coming, the WARN letters from companies around the state. And just to give a couple of statistics on that, we have, as of Monday, the end of the day Monday, we have 284 total WARN letters. 33 of those are permanent. The rest of them were all temporary, which is a good sign. It affected 19,830 employees. We've had since then updates to several of those warn letters, either rescission letters or updates, meaning they've brought all of their employees back, or they're starting to recall employees, or they've brought back some, you know, a certain percentage of them. So we're working with those companies. Now, there are also businesses that didn't, that weren't required to send warn letters for their layoffs and closures for one reason or another. They didn't have, you know, they just didn't fit into the requirements for a warn letter. And so in our office, we call those non-warns. And of the non-warns, there were a lot. There's a lot. But we selected out of that 2,200 manufacturing businesses, and this is sort of under the guidance of the Secretary of Commerce, Secretary Copeland, to select the manufacturing businesses, which is one of the company, one of the industries that had the highest level of closures and layoffs. So there were 2,200 of them across the state. And what we did was we put together, we worked with the Commerce Secretary and his team and EDPNC to put together a strategy where economic and workforce development professionals would be reaching out, mostly the business service reps within the local area workforce boards, our team up in Raleigh, and the EDPNC regional industry managers were reaching out to businesses, these 2,200 businesses, to ask them where we could help. I mean, generally, the question overall was, what can we do to help? What do you need? It wasn't about pushing any particular service or anything like that. But the strategy included three main focus areas. One of them, the first one was, if you are willing and able to pivot production to manufacture personal protection equipment, then we want to know that right away, because we can get you set up. And we partnered with NC State's IES program, the MEP, the Manufacturing Expansion Program, to work with them and Manufacturing Solutions and EDPNC and Emergency Management and DHHS. I mean, there was a there's a whole team of people working together to help manufacturing companies that are interested, willing, and able to pivot their production to get them up and running, because obviously there's FDA regulations you have to meet. There's specific rules around what can and can't be done based on the supply of textiles and things like that. So we wanted to identify the companies that were willing to pivot their production, whether short-term or long-term. That was priority number one. What we did learn from that, and what we've what we continue to see, is that there is more of a long-term need for that, because we've heard emergency management and a lot of the healthcare professionals in that industry say that they will not be caught shorthanded next time around if this, God forbid, this were to ever happen again. To have an ongoing supply ready and available is very important. So from that, some of the companies who were willing to pivot their production, we've seen where in some cases that those companies have been able to actually expand their company footprint to include an additional vertical for healthcare and medical supplies. So there's specifically one defense military equipment manufacturer in the state who set aside a number of employees to do this, and now they're actually looking for another building to set up a whole nother division of their company. So the good side out of all of this could be that there are new jobs, a lot more capital investment around it, and manufacturing within our state. The next thing that we focused on was for the companies who were not willing and able to pivot their production. It was to figure out how we could keep their furloughs or their closure from becoming permanent. So where do we step in and help with layoff aversion. And we do that with the state program that's called Business Edge. And hopefully everybody on this call has heard of Business Edge. But if they haven't, just let me know because I can let you know all about it. But for layoff aversion, there are so many different things that a company needs. It could be that they need to sit down now. They've been closed for a while and they need to sit down and figure out what their financial strategy is going to be going forward, or how they can incorporate something that is being discussed in the legislature right now is short-term compensation, reducing hours of employees so that they can continue to work and receive benefits, but then also receive unemployment. Now, that's not something that the state has, that's not a program that we have right now in North Carolina, but there are 26 other states in the country that have it. And we are going to be having that conversation with the governor later today. And there are two bills, one in House and one in Senate right now to support it. So fingers crossed that that will go through. So whatever it is that we can do to help them stay open. The other thing is, when they do reopen, what do they need to do that? There are safety, healthcare, things that have to be considered. And so the cost that goes along with that, certifications, you know, OSHA certifications and training that will need to go along with that. Whether or not they open up a third shift, say they're a company that's got two shifts, but because they've got to keep people 6 feet apart, less than 50% capacity, how do we help them open up a third shift so that they can continue to keep their employees working, but still meet their production goals? And then also, we've seen a lot of companies, and we've been able to help them look at new market growth. Where can they look at additional avenues for market growth, particularly when some of these companies are able to look at international trade and e-commerce. So we've been able to help some companies set up e-commerce sites. SBTDC is great. They've got some expert staff that can help companies with that website, the e-commerce work. And so we've been able to help some there. And then finally, we want to make sure that the companies know about the grants that are available for employers. The CARES Act obviously had lots of money out there, lots of headaches on trying to figure out how to get it, but we were able to help, you know, we've all been able to help companies work through some of that in some cases. Small business loans through the Rural Center, through the General Assembly, grants through the General Assembly, the community banks. And now they're also talking about, in the House, they're talking about job retention grants. And so it could be that there will be grants available for companies that were able to retain their employees, but still saw a decline in gross receipts or sales. And so they're could potentially be some grants available for them coming up soon. Overall, though, the focus is really on employer engagement. How do we help them? How do we help them focus? How do we keep their workers in their jobs? And so all of that aligns with the U.S. Department of Labor, the federal regulations, WIOA regulations, and also with the NC Job Ready Initiative. The governor's initiative on employer leadership and engagement is where it just all falls into that. So that's really what we've been working on across the state with our local area workforce boards, our business service reps, and then with us supporting them however we can. Are there any questions or anything in particular that anybody has?
Jenny, you mentioned, and is it okay if I share your email?
Yeah.
I probably, you know, you can go on the North Carolina Department of Commerce site and there's an employee directory, so it's publicly available. But if you want to reach out to Jenny, you know, probably the best way to do that if you're a company is go through Barbara Darby, who's our business services lead, regional business services coordinator for our workforce board. And you can reach out to Barbara at barbaraD@landasky.org. And Barbara, I know, is on this call. I think Jason Chappell with NC Works Career Center in Transylvania County is on this call, some others. So Jenny had mentioned Business Edge and a few other programs. So if you're an employer or if you know of an employer who is in need of some of those services, you know, certainly reach out to us and we will connect with Jenny and her team on, you know, how to do that. Jenny, you mentioned Business Edge, and I think a lot of folks on this call, you know, a lot of different backgrounds, they may not be entirely familiar with it. So could you just give us a little update about Business Edge and the work you're doing there, and also what type of companies, you know, that assistance is available to? Because I don't know if everyone is aware of that.
Sure. So business, let me back up. Layoff aversion is a federal mandate under USDOL has some guidance out there. It's part of the rapid response function of WIOA. We have, in North Carolina, our layoff aversion strategy is called Business Edge. And what we've got sort of still in pilot phase, although we're pretty much growing out of that, especially right now, we started out with a focus on manufacturing companies that were in tier one and tier two counties that were locally based companies, meaning North Carolina based companies with employees, with an employee count of 20 to 250 employees. What we focused on is, or what we do focus on is how can we keep this company from closing and laying off employees? And just in general, every time we had a local area business service rep or our staff or the Small Business Development Technology Center staff who we partner with on this, when they went out and talked to companies, probably 99.9% of the time, the company owner would come back and say, well, I just need money. I just need some financial backing. And when you hear that, you think, okay, well, let's try to find somebody to give them a loan, and you kind of make referrals to organizations like Carolina Small Business Development Center. But really, if you're listening to what those businesses are saying and ask the right questions, you can narrow it down to a few challenges that really need to be addressed. It's not about the money. I mean, obviously it's always about the money, but there are issues that need to be addressed that will help with that. And I say that because there's so many different things. Every company that we have, every client that we've had through that program has been different. One of them was just training. They needed to train, well, they need to hire and train the right people because they just didn't have the right people coming in the door. Another one was the inventory that a company had. They just had so much inventory and their production wasn't allowing them to use it up fast enough, but the order for the inventory kept coming, or the supplies were still going out. And so just to cut that in half was of help to that company. So it's really all of that kind of stuff. So it's really different, but that's what Business Edge is. So if a local area business service rep meets with a company and hears, we've got some, as part of our training, we have some red flags to listen for, some of the early warning signs that we train them to listen for. And when they hear those things, they can refer that company to the Business Edge program. And then there's a whole four-phase process that we go through to work with a company on getting them back on their feet and headed in the right direction. So that's what Business Edge is.
And Jenny, you mentioned your partners. So on these calls, we've had many of those partners on these calls. Our local director of the SBTDC at Western Carolina. We've had Chris Chung with the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. We've had Thomas Stith, who's the North Carolina director of the SBA. So many of those partners that you've mentioned, you know, we've had on previous calls and, you know, trying to provide resources for businesses. We know in our region, you know, we had the tightest labor market in the state for over 5 years. And And as of March, we don't know the final number for April, so I think it'll be probably consistent with March. But we have the Asheville Metro now has the second highest unemployment rate of any metro in the state. And while we did pick up a few jobs in April, from the previous month, we're still down over 30,000 jobs compared to where we were, the 1st of March. So, this COVID-19 has hit our region pretty hard economically, but I know you see that across the state. You mentioned on the WARN notices, while we've had some in our area, many of the businesses are laying off, hope to recall those workers, but, a lot of that depends on global and national economic forces, and so they may not have been required to file a WARN notice. So what's some advice that you could give those businesses or, to help them as they try to recover?
To help what kind of, I wasn't following the whole question there.
I apologize. A lot of our businesses, that have laid off individuals, they intend to recall those businesses, but, the economy's changing and, they hope to be able to bring them back. Many of those are on unemployment now. And I know that you have all these different resources in our across the state to support those businesses. But, if a business is unable to recall those workers, that be more of a permanent layoff. But you mentioned some of the resources available to help them. What are, is there some other things that maybe we could do to support them? You mentioned the, I think they call it, it's not job sharing, but where someone could maybe, it's sort of like a part-time layoff and then they could work and still draw UI benefits. So are there some other opportunities there to assist them? And if there's not, that's okay.
Yeah, no, I think the first thing that I would do, that I would offer an employer, is to really look at what their business model is and see where it can shift. So if they were, travel and tourism got hit huge across the state, and I know that's a big one in your area. It is where I live in Wilmington, too. So we're feeling it just as well. But to really look at what the business model is and what the financials are for the company and see where that can be shifted. That's where SBTDC has their experts, their financial experts can come in and sit down and go through a financial strategy, looking at new markets. Just like the company that was doing just military equipment is now expanding because they started doing the healthcare equipment. And so now they're able to really look at two different verticals. So I think just looking at what the direction is of the company and see if there is any additional need that they could fulfill that still fits in with what their overall goals are is the first thing I would say. The second is shifting or making the shifts different. I think I had mentioned that some of the companies that have one shift, people come in, they work 7 to 3 or they work 8 to 5, whatever, shifting that to a different model where half the employees are there during the day and half of them are there at night so that they can keep those employees working without having to slow down their productivity. That's something that we've done with a couple of businesses already. And then the other one is if a company is looking at an opportunity to expand their overall, I don't know, their product line or their business model overall, where can they partner with the workforce system to train those employees for that? Obviously, we've got incumbent worker training dollars, and I know, Nathan, you're going to get on me about that, but there are opportunities to customize some training with some of these companies so that if a company comes up with a new product that's going to be more palatable in this market, then how do we get that? Who do we talk to get a prototype made and test that? And we have resources for that. And then how do we find funding to support the purchase of new equipment? We have resources for that. And then how do we train the employees that we have now, upskill them to be able to use that equipment and work on this new product development or product manufacturing? So it just really, there's so many different things that it just depends on what a company is doing now, where they want to go, where they think they want to go, and what we can help them do.
Well, and you mentioned, I know you've got to go here in a moment, but you mentioned companies transitioning, and in our region, we're really proud of companies like Kitspo and Sylvan Sport and others who are, manufacturing PPE and responding to this crisis. The work of the Supply Connector and Carolina Textile District and others. So, it's amazing how businesses have stepped up and to try to respond to this challenge, and we appreciate your support. And certainly, I wouldn't get on to you about anything. You're always really supportive of our region. I think, and to give everyone a little backstory, so, and this is really true for North Carolina as well, our North Carolina's economy has really been outperforming the nation based on many metrics over the last several years, and that's basically true for our local area as well. And the way workforce funding is allocated at the federal level, the lower your unemployment rate, the fewer layoffs you have, the less funding you receive. So our area has been, our workforce budget has been cut in half over the last 5 years because of, we had a really tight labor market, and the state funding for workforce is the funding that the state receives from DOL has also been cut. And so we've had this big shock to our system. And while we've been able to receive some additional federal dollars at this time, the need is still pretty significant. So we're hoping there will be additional federal dollars come from Congress to support our nation's workforce needs. I know North Carolina certainly is in that boat. The state had requested about, I think, $30 million through the National Dislocated Worker Grant Program, and we received $6 million. So those funds are being deployed, and our board was blessed to receive some funding from that grant. And we just appreciate all the support from you and the team at North Carolina Commerce. So, Jenny, thank you for being with us. Any final words? Any parting thoughts?
I think that, because you mentioned the budget cuts, and yeah, the whole state as a whole has had budget cuts over the last 5 years. But one thing that that you and the local area workforce boards are doing is being very innovative and creative in how you continue to provide services to the job seekers and the employers. I mean, even in this COVID, I will say that I have never seen so much creativity. Your team, some of the other workforce business services teams, putting together virtual and electronic versions of services, including, virtual job fairs, especially for the companies that were doing immediate hiring. The grocery stores, the delivery companies, grocery stores, restaurants, Amazon, Lowe's, home improvement. There were a lot of companies that really stepped up and said, we need people and we need them fast. And we would not have been able to deliver that with shut down career centers if the teams had not said, we can do this virtually, let's just figure it out, and really made that happen. So, I mean, kudos to all of you guys for getting that done.
As you mentioned, it's really all about partnerships. And so you talk about the partnerships at the state level. We're blessed to have those at our local level as well with our economic developers and chambers of commerce. And so, the first part of this month, we held our first large-scale virtual hiring event. We're blessed to serve a little over 50 employers and had over 600 job seekers participate. So we understand we're going to have to do more of that in the future as long as there's limits on gatherings and under the COVID-19 restrictions. But Jenny, thank you so much for joining us. I know you got to get to another meeting, and we just really appreciate your leadership on behalf of the state of North Carolina. And we'll hopefully come, you come to visit us in Asheville when this all passes, and we'll come to see you in Wilmington, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks, Nathan, and everybody.
Thank you so much. We did have in the chat box one mention of SCORE, and SCORE is a great resource to help businesses provide consulting services to the local businesses. So we want to make you aware of that. I don't know if we have anybody else on the call that that wants to share anything. We can probably end earlier. I don't want to take too much of your time, but I just want to remind you next week, I think we will suspend this call since it is July 4th weekend following that. So we'll give everybody a break. I know everyone's tired of all these Zoom calls, but we do want to share relevant information and be helpful to you. And so we will kick that off the following week. So we hope you can join us. If you have any suggestions for topics that you want to share, please reach out to me at nathan@landosky.org. You can also go to our Orlando Sky website, landosky.org. There's a COVID-19 response page, and we try to post resources that are available throughout the region. So, and if you can't find what you're looking for, you're certainly you're welcome to reach out to me, and I'll try to help you work with our team to do so. So we want everyone to stay safe, stay well, and just want to thank everyone for all the work you do in our region to help us get through this crisis. We have an amazing community, and we just want to give a shout out to everyone. So stay safe, stay well, and have a wonderful afternoon.